Voters in St. Paul are being asked to approve a $3 million increase in their property taxes to assist the city school system. The property tax hike is one result of the financial problems the school system faced earlier this year when it was unable to sell some short-term bonds to finance operating expenses. Part of the solution to that problem required the St. Paul school system to stop paying for current operations by borrowing against future tax receipts and state support payments. To begin getting back into the black, the district had to make significant budget cuts and ask the voters to approve a tax increase on the November 2nd general election ballot. The chairman of the school board and the superintendent of schools addressed that ballot referendum and other questions at a recent Citizens League breakfast in St. Paul. This morning, we present their remarks. First, school board chairman Eleanor Weber responds to some Citizens League questions about the tax increase, and then Superintendent Dr. George Young comments on instructional television and daycare programs in the St. Paul school system. Eleanor Weber has served on the school board for 2 years. She was elected chairman this summer. Dr. Young has been superintendent of schools since 1970. Now, here is Eleanor Weber.
It's a pleasure indeed to be here to talk to you about education, the public school system in the city of St. Paul, and to answer specifically the questions which the Citizens League sent to us. I will try to be concise and confine my remarks to the questions sent so that you in turn can ask additional questions if you wish. The first question asked us is, why is the St. Paul Board of Education requesting voter approval of a $3 million property tax increase in the November election? This is the only means we have to help ourselves if we believe that a crisis exists within the St. Paul school system with regard to financing education. The board does believe that it has identified a gap for the 77-78 school year of $5 to $6 million, and that unless we want an exact repeat, if you will, of what we have just been through with the budget in for the present school year of cutting everything drastically, we had better use all means available to us to find additional revenue. We had a report from a Blue Ribbon Committee, which we appointed last spring. This Citizens Education Advisory Committee studied our financial situation and made many recommendations. One of the recommendations it made was that we go to the voters with a referendum, give the citizens of the city a chance to hear the facts, participate in the discussion, and then decide whether or not they were willing to support an increase in property taxes. As I say, this is the only route open to us, short of cutting the budget, to help ourselves, so we are taking it. How would the additional revenue be used? The increase we are asking for, $3 million, would raise $2.49 million. This is based on the present assessed valuations in the city, which might be a bit different by the time the levy was actually spread on the tax rolls. The board has had considerable discussion how the money would be used. It's a rather difficult question to answer because there are so many unknowns. We have established for this year board priorities in terms of educational program, and these board priorities have been basic skills, mandated programs such as desegregation, special education programs, are the things that we are required to do legally. But heading the top of the list has been basic skills. I do believe it's safe to say that these priorities would be discussed. The board would decide whether or not there were what the priorities were going to be for the coming year. Other than that, I am not prepared to make any statement because the board has not made any decision among itself. I do want to make one thing clear. We are not talking about improving an educational program in that is, in terms of adding things. We are talking about the effort that we believe is necessary to maintain the program that we have at the present time. And that we believe that the cuts this year have been major cuts, which will hurt the program and will make it harder for the students to receive the things that they need in terms of good education. So we are talking about maintaining the present program so that we will not be forced into making additional cutbacks in the quality of the education available in the public school system. Would this be a one-time or permanent tax levy? We have to abide by the state law which governs this matter. The law which gives us the permission to do it says that the levy would be permanent unless on petition of the voters there was another referendum putting the question of repeal to the voters. And if the voters voted to repeal, then it would be repealed. However, the legislature could wipe out our ability to do it. There is also a legal question whether or not there is another statute which would limit, and this would be the one setting up the UFARS system in the state, whether this statute gives us the authority to ask for this increase only for the coming school year, 1977-78, or whether we can have it longer than that. This is something we will have to get an opinion on. The second question, what factors have contributed to the increasing cost of running the St. Paul school system? The basic problems are the increased salaries. For example, for the school year 1974-75, from the school year 1974-75 to 75-76, there was an increase of 8.78% in salaries for teachers. For the difference from 1975-76 to 76-77 was 7.5% increase. And similar increases can be found for all of our other employee groups. As you know, we are under the requirement to bargain with all of our employees who are organized collectively into bargaining units according to state law. One ordinarily does not bargain in good faith and bargain on the basis of no increases. So we have bargained and we have granted increases in salaries that are comparable to increases being granted by other districts, other school districts, and by other governmental units such as the city. For example, when we settled our contract with the teachers, we were just under the metropolitan average settlement. Our other costs have risen too. In our budget, there's been a 77% increase in the cost of heating fuel, a 21% increase for domestic gas, electricity 17%, water and sewer 28%. We have an estimate saying that the increased cost of energy by 1985 will lead to a budget of $6 million just for energy purposes. Supplies have gone up. We are supporting the desegregation program. This is costing us money. The need to generate reports to a multitude of agencies is also costing us money. All this adds to our operating costs. What priorities has the board used to guide its decisions about cuts? I stated some of the priorities, the basic skills, the mandated programs such as desegregation, Title IX, special education. The safety of the children has been a factor in our thinking. We have tried to maintain class size as low as possible, especially in the kindergarten through third grade level. These then have guided our cuts. And what kind of cuts have we made? I'd like to read off some of them. For example, in secondary education, we have reduced the number of teaching positions 116. We have reduced counselors by 2, principals by 1, librarians by 1, and clerical staff by 5. We've reduced the athletic budget from $731,000 to $577,000. We've cut the expenditures for learning centers by 34%. We've reduced the number of elementary teachers by 84 and made corresponding cuts in secretary, clerical, itinerant teachers, 1 principal less. The one budget we have not cut is the special education budget. As I mentioned, special education is a mandated program, and we are supposed to be meeting the individual needs on a prescribed basis for every child eligible for special educational services as defined by the state of Minnesota. We've cut the instructional media budget by 22%, the educational TV budget by 54%, health services by 10%, program and staff development by 7.6%. This then gives you some idea of the cuts that have been made. We've wiped out some field trips completely. The next question, what factors have contributed to reduced revenues available to the St. Paul School District? I think there are really 2 things. One is the declining enrollment. We are a declining enrollment district. We have predicted a 2,000 pupil loss for this year. We predict a 2,000 pupil loss for the following year. When we lose 2,000 pupils, we lose a minimum of $960 per pupil. This is the amount we are permitted to spend per pupil by the state of Minnesota. So if you multiply the 960 by 2,000, this comes out to $1.92 million. Then we are coping, as I say, with inflation just as everybody else. Inflation is occurring. I'm not sure what it's been so far this year, but if I recall correctly, it's been running someplace between 5 and 7% a year. We have to do the increased paperwork. This then gives you some idea of what has been reducing the revenues. What additional cuts will have to be made if the referendum is not approved? If we, this referendum will raise no more than $2.5 million. That's only half the way, because remember I said there was a gap of the $5 to $6 million. If the referendum is approved, we would still be left with a $2.5 million gap. As I've said before, this is really part of a total plan, and the total plan involves identifying, putting together a legislative program and presenting it to the legislature. We believe that we need to help ourselves, and this is what we are trying to do here. If we do not pass this, we will be short the whole amount of money. I do not believe that the legislature would be willing to raise the basic foundation aid $120 per pupil, which is what would be required to raise the $5 to $6 million we would be short. The legislature might possibly, and maybe not, I don't know, be willing to help us halfway and raise the basic foundation aid $60 per pupil. I don't know. What cuts would be made? The 80% of our budget is salaries. So I would assume that if we had to reduce our budget by a large sum of money, much of the reduction would occur in staff. For example, every time we increase our pupil-teacher ratio by one pupil, we estimate that we can save $1 million in staff, in teacher salaries. So if we had to save salaries, save money, I'm sure one area we would cut would be in teaching staff and all other staff categories too. If the referendum fails, I have said that we will be going to the legislature, but really not for additional taxing authority, but rather for additional state aid in some other form. Just what, I don't know. These, then, are my remarks, and I'd like to turn the remainder of the time over to Dr. Young.
As I said a little earlier, the next two questions do lead away from the discussion up to this point. First one asks what trends can be observed in use of television by the St. Paul School District. I'll take just a few moments to recite my own credentials as they relate to the use of television in schools. Some years ago, when I was in Illinois during the early 1960s, I was very much involved in the use of instructional television, particularly with a program which was known as the Midwest Program in Airborne Television Instruction. It was called IMPATI in those days. I was representative of the state of Illinois on the board of directors for IMPATI. I also served as a consultant for a couple of years to Illinois Bell Telephone Company in regard to the use of television in schools. And I can say that the very great promise which many of us saw in the use of instructional television in schools has not been realized. There was a very great promise seen in the use of radio in schools when radio first was invented, and that has not been realized. A very great promise in the use of films in schools. When films were introduced as instructional media. And that promise has not been realized as well. And it may be that those great promises for the use of these exciting, creative ways to present information to students hasn't been realized, or at least not fully realized, because of the inability of boards of education and school faculties, first of all, to be able to afford the rather large amount of expenditure required in order to make certain the schools are fully and appropriately equipped, you know, to handle such media. And then second, and interestingly enough, the very complicated problem of scheduling such materials for use on the part of students. And often the television schedule just doesn't jive very well with the schedules that have already been established in the schools. In St. Paul, the use of television in the public schools started several years ago. Our schools, compared to other large city schools, are relatively well equipped with television sets, and over the past few years, we've been increasing the number of videotape recorders and players that are in the schools. However, as Mrs. Weber has recounted to you in her portion of the discussion, we have cut that part of the budget by 50-some percent for this school year, and the supervisor of that portion of our instructional program, that position has been removed. So that you can see, so far as instructional television is concerned, for this coming year, there will be a significant decrease in the amount that we will be able to do. Of course, as of this time, we are using videotape. We do receive programs from Channel 2. Those programs are on tape. The instructional materials have been developed and are available, and teachers will continue to use those programs, and students will continue to view them. Second part of that question deals with the metropolitan area. And are the school districts in the metropolitan area working together on broadcast or non-broadcast television? And the answer to that question is no, we are not. Channel 2 has attempted to bring about some sort of an understanding or coalition among several school districts, but with very little success. Very frankly, St. Paul, and to some extent Minneapolis, but I think mainly St. Paul, has in the past financed the programs that are on Channel 2 for instructional purposes, that is, for use in schools, and many other school districts have used those programs. I think the word that is used by the Channel 2 people is they have pirated those programs and do not pay fees for their use. Most of them do not. But there's been no organized effort to bring us all together to do any planning, but there is a chance for that as well. I think many of you here are aware of the growing interest over the past years in some sort of a metropolitan area planning for public education. Legislation has been passed. We are now very much involved in the setting up of the service units in the metropolitan area, and I see as a distinct possibility there planning for and perhaps implementation of plans for the use of these various kinds of electronic media in our schools, including television. The last part of that question is, could they do that? And the answer is yes, they could. The real question is, will they? And we have yet to see. Then the last question in this series has to do with after-school and preschool child care, the role that we are playing in St. Paul in that, and whether or not we see that there may be some continued growth. The interest in such programs before and after and during the school day dealing with very young children, children below the age of kindergarten and down to very young children, the interest in that has been growing, and the research that deals with the very young child is compelling. And that is the research that deals with the opportunity for learning during those very early years, and as well the learning growth potential during those early years, and what effect, that is the research has to do with the kinds of effect that training or instruction may have during those early years. We are told, and I believe it, that the greatest potential for growth and learning does occur from birth up through the fourth or fifth year. And somewhere during that period of time, the potential for continued growth and learning is established in the young child. And it does seem to many educators and many other people, including legislators, that many of the problems that many of our children face by the time they get to school could be solved or at least alleviated if some assistance were given to the child before the child ever gets to school at kindergarten age. Then, of course, with the growth of changes in the way we want to do things in this country, that includes the equal opportunities for all of us, regardless of sex, for employment, and changing views in regard to the roles of males and females in families and elsewhere, there is a greater concern about and need for and desire for child care programs. We have had some such programs in St. Paul schools. There's an early childhood program at Dayton's Bluff. The focus there is not only on the child, but as well and equally on parents. We have had a program for young children financed through federal funds. It's called the TOTS program, T-O-T-S. I'm sorry, I can't remember what the T-O-T-S stands for. But that program has been dropped because the federal funding has been dropped. I believe, however, that we can look forward to expansion in that area. There have been bills presented to the state. There's very much concern at the congressional level that monies be made available for such programs. And there are many of us who feel that a logical place, a logical institution for such programs is the public schools. I believe that, and therefore my own concept of child care, young child care, goes beyond simply taking care of the physical needs of the children and security for them during the day, but as well educational needs. That expansion and growth will only occur, however, with the governmental funding at the state and federal level. There's no chance that we see of funding at the local level for such programs, as important as I believe they really are.
George Young, superintendent of schools in St. Paul, and Eleanor Weber, the school board chairman. The district estimates that if voters approve the 3 mil property tax increase, taxes on a $30,000 home in St. Paul will rise by about $30 per year. That figure does not include possible adjustments from the Circuit Breaker Tax Relief Program, so depending on a homeowner's income, the increase could be less. Superintendent Young was asked after his formal remarks to comment about the results of previous millage increase requests in St. Paul.
Now, the history of referenda in St. Paul goes back quite a way, including the time when the school district was a department in city government. And I'm trying to remember now, we had that sheet made out for us. 1964 was the last one for millage increase, and it passed. However, when I first came to St. Paul in 1970, that budget year, beginning in July of 1970, the millage was increased by about 22 mils. In those days, when the St. Paul Board adopted a budget that required additional levy, the board did that and then waited to see if there would be a reverse or negative referendum. That fall, there was no such referendum, therefore the 22 mils was spread. Following that, with new legislation, of course, it's no longer possible for St. Paul or any other school district, and we have to go to referendum. But Mrs. Weber has told me 1964 was the last time, and at that time it passed. There have been bond issues since that time, as you know. I think 1968 was a bond issue which passed. And then a few years ago, we lost one bond issue and came back again shortly after and won the second time around.
During the debate and adoption of the budget, the board was criticized by some for not cutting more top administrators from the staff, especially from the so-called superintendency, a group which advises Young and other officials. At the Citizens League breakfast, Young was asked if transferring some administrators to top-paying teaching jobs wouldn't result in the layoff of less experienced, less well-paid teachers.
The administrators whose positions have been eliminated from the administrative chart, for those few who go back to other jobs, and there are few because many of the people decided to take early retirement and have done so, but for those few, they go back to positions and receive salaries of those positions. They do not carry their administrator salaries along with them. And as well, there are no people who are bumped as a result of the administrative moves, or rather the move of administrators from positions which have been abolished. The board directed the superintendent to cut the administrative overhead by an additional $160,000. The recommendation which I made to the board actually produced a cut of about $170,000. Three of those 11 people moved back to other positions. Just three out of 11 moved back. The additional amount of cut will cover the expense of keeping three teachers on the staff. In other words, these people aren't going to bump anyone. And then during the school year, through attrition, there are bound to be at least three people leave, and then those positions would not be filled. No one gets fired or bumped or anything of that sort. And the salaries go back to the salary of the position to which the people go. And at another time, I'm getting a message here. I'd be very pleased to talk about what the so-called superintendency is and what it is not. Superintendency, by the way, receives no salary that relates to being with the superintendency. And many of the salaries of other so-called middle management people are much higher than several of the people who actually sit with the superintendent.
School Board Superintendent Dr. George Young, and you also heard during the broadcast the chairman of the St. Paul School Board, Eleanor Weber. The 3 mil property tax increase request appears on St. Paul city ballots on November 2nd.